you aren't being a proper woman, therefore you must be a witch. You must be a witch.
Happy Lammas!
Hi, witches.
Welcome to the Missing Witches Lammas special.
Yeah, we're going to do a chatty special.
Yeah, because we did that wonderful interview with Pam Grossman about her book, Waking the Witch. Buy it, read it. And it was the first time, other than like little bits and pieces that you sort of get about us in our writing and in our conversations with other people, we haven't really talked about ourselves at all.
Yeah. And like, I feel like when we do have little intro bits of the podcast where we're just talking, we're like, oh, this is fun. We could maybe do this for a bit, but we haven't really sat down to do it. And so this could be like a 7-hour episode because when the two of us get going, we just sleep over. You guys are coming to a sleepover.
So we're going to use the term Lammas because the other pagan term for this date on the wheel of the year is a little bit unpronounceable.
We don't feel comfortable not fucking
it. Yeah, so hit us up with how to pronounce the alternate name of Lammas, Lug. You guys know what we're talking about.
Better than we do. Also, send us so many emails. Tell us about your lives. Tell us about your spells that are working. Tell us about your like lifelong celebration of pagan holidays. We're just learning stuff from all your emails. We adore you. You're the most fascinating people we've ever met. So yeah, we love it when you send us stuff. It's the coolest. Our email is missingwitches@gmail.com, and then on social everywhere it's just @missingwitches. We fucking love hearing from you. You're just the coolest.
Emails are my favorite.
They're so magical.
What other announcements do we have, Risa?
So we have this idea. Tell us what you think. People have asked us about doing ads, and it's something we're open to, but we're also like kind of an anti-capitalist podcast. And by kind of, I mean a fiercely fucking anti-capitalist podcast. But we love your small businesses and how we want to make a living and support our loved ones and eat food and have houses. So here's an idea. We wanted to offer our ad space to members of the community. You guys have hustles. You make incredible jewelry. You make beautiful spells. You make some of the most beautiful witchy things we've ever seen.
And so, I've bought a lot of them myself, as you guys know.
Yeah, and you write books. We love to buy your books. So if there's something that you want to advertise to our community, send us an email at missingwitches@gmail.com. We have we're going to do super, super affordable ad space in the podcast and on social media. I think we'll let you know when it's a sponsored one, and we're only going to do it for ethical, cool, local witchy stuff that we think you'll like. And yeah, we'll figure it out with you if it's something you're interested in.
Because the other thing is, like, advertising on podcasts can be expensive and daunting, and there are all these like algorithms and equations about how you pay and how it gets in, you know, you this much money per thousand play, and it's all very complicated, and it can be hard to sustain for a small business. Mm-hmm. So we want to make it easy. We want to make it accessible for you guys, our listeners, with your small businesses, where you don't have to get into some weird kerfuffle that's like network, you know, ad network or weird, you know, financial math. Like, email us about your product. We'll work something out.
Yeah, exactly. We'll do it simple. So that's a fun thing. And we're excited to start our own Etsy.
Yes.
We have, so my partner is a leather artisan who's going to be making some beautiful stuff with us. We're going to screen print t-shirts by moonlight. We're going to do it as crafty and DIY as we do everything.
Yeah, we're thinking about maybe patches and t-shirts again. If you guys have ideas or something, some kind of Missing Witches merch that you would like to see, definitely let us know. But we're not thinking about mass producing. We're thinking about making things, ritualizing the craft of patch making or t-shirt making, you know, blessing our inks under the full moon, that kind of thing. So just expanding our reach
and our really. Kind of creative practice of this podcast. You know, I think you guys know this was something for us to do for ourselves. Really, it was mm-hmm. like it was a way of doing the research we wanted to be doing and also making these kind of art pieces, sound pieces, meditative pieces, and writing. For mm-hmm. me, it was a big part of it. And the research that's like detective work.
Work.
Yeah. And to get to know more about what feminist history is and means. Anyway, you guys know. And so, yeah, we want to expand that. We're both visual artists, visual people. So we're going to be playing around more with that in the future. So let us know if you are interested in that in any way. Let's play together. This is updates.
Update city.
Schemes and updates. This is summer. Like, let's plant seeds. Let's see things flourish.
That's the thing. You know, we're at Lammastide now, and this is like the first harvest festival of the year. So it seems like a good time to sort of announce all of these like seeds of ideas that we've been having. And hopefully before season 3 comes out, at Mabon in September, we'll have everything lined up and all of your ideas will have come to us by email or messenger or,
yeah.
Lammastide.
Let's talk about spells. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about spells that work. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about things that, little seeds we've planted that have flourished. That's what we sort of thought the theme for this episode would be. We did have a story we wanted to tell about how we first started. I guess it is sort of about how we first started to make up magic together.
Yeah, sort of like the formalization of a coven, although it was very informal and remains very informal for sure. But I mean, for me, and you can talk about this too, like the moments leading up to the moment where we started working together, like I honestly don't remember not thinking I was a witch. Like there was never like a coming out moment for me or like a realization even. Listeners, please help me. I wanted to tell this story really quick. When I was like, three, my uncle ran like a little independent bookshop and we went there and I was allowed to choose one book and I chose this book and this is the only thing I remember about it is like the centerfold was, the story was about a witch and the centerfold was her having an accident on her broom and the whole page said catastrophe and this witch like falling off of her broom. I can't remember. Please, listeners, do you know what book I'm talking about? A witch book from the early 80s with catastrophe in the centerfold. Please tell me if anybody, please remember this
librarians,
book.
Go away.
Yes. Librarian witches, please hop on your brooms and somebody remember something about this book. But yeah, I mean, I got to choose the book. Yeah, I chose the witch book. Yeah. I was 3. I remember being 12 and going to the library into the card catalog, like learning about the European witch hunt because that's the only information you could get about witches was or you know Salem, American and European witch hunts. So do you have like a moment or do you have that same sort of like?
I don't have a coming out moment either. I have these memories that are like, until recently have been almost sort of shameful memories of feeling like, so when I was like 13, I started leading like meditations with other teenage friends in a basement, you know, like we would drink and I would put people under hypnosis. Like people would sit in a circle around me and I would have like, you know, like a big 16-year-old guy or, you know, like a tough 15-year-old girl or whatever who wanted to like lie on the ground with their head in my hands while I led them on like a guided meditation that we called being hypnotized. And, you know, and it was something we did together. I would ask them questions. I would tell them things. I would tell them what I visualized. They would tell me what they visualized. It was like a strange period, and it's because I grew up playing theater games, you know, and that's what it was like lie on the floor, relax, picture this thing, now stand up and move your body as though you are that animal.
Yeah,
you know, and that was like a gateway for me to being like, to being feeling like I could see what other people were seeing with their eyes closed. Mm-hmm. You know? I did a lot of like sitting in the bathroom of a community center with a Ouija board with people talking to their grandparents and then wondering later if I had been like taking advantage of them or lying when I felt like I knew the answer. So I led the piece, you know, like, but there was so much of like trying not to be too dark or not to be too weird, or we moved so much when I was a kid. I just wanted to be, I just want approval still. Just like fucking send me carrots and like tell me I'm good enough, you know? So I think that, you know, Caroline Elliott, who's like an interesting witch teacher and writer, always says shame is the magic killer. And that was like a powerful idea for me, was like, just let go of the shame of those impulses, those memories, those feelings like you're special, those feelings like you had a relationship with the wind. Like, you don't have to shame yourself for having that.
No.
That's a beautiful thing. And you know what? You have it. You're right.
You do. If your friends think you're weird for, like, putting your feet in the ocean and bursting into tears, well, then give me weird. Like you said, like, you didn't want to seem too weird, and we all went through that, especially as younger people, you know, where we're mature women of a certain age now, and some of that by grace only goes away, you know, but too weird was like my goal. That was not something that I was worried. Like I, in retrospect at the time, I didn't think this, but in retrospect for me, it was like, I had purple hair, rainbow overalls, like acid.
Sort of what you're wearing today.
You know, like a more high school version of what I have on right now in this moment. I actually realized that I reverted completely. Like, I'm me at 77, like in, at 17, purple hair and overalls. And I'm like back there, purple hair and overalls. Anyway, where was I going with this?
Oh, you said you realize now in retrospect, it wasn't about being too weird or weird enough.
No, it was, this is the thing. When you know why people are laughing at you, that's easy. When you're not sure why people are laughing at you, that is anxiety provoking and crushing and gut wrenching and destroying. So again, this is only sort of in retrospect that I realized that this was what I was doing, but I was like putting on a clown costume for the reason that then I knew why you were laughing at me. And it was something I had done. It was something I had control over. It was me, it wasn't like, oh, you're, you know, my, your family's poor, so we're gonna laugh at you, like, you know, you're, you have no control over that kind of thing. But when I put on my warrior suit of armor, which again was like tie-dyed overalls or whatever it was, you know, that was my warrior stance.
I get that so much. There's so much power. I used to write for Worn Fashion Journal when that existed for a while. And it made me feel like I understood those choices better as a teenager, where it was like putting on like the tails coat and a top hat or whatever to go to my private school was like, okay, everybody's looking at me, but at least they're looking at me for a reason I chose. That's so right. And that not to say that everything is magic, and, you know, I don't want to diminish when people feel like they're magical, but also I want to uplift everything to the level of magical and say, yes, that was fucking magical when you did that. When you drew their eyes or chose to draw their eyes or chose to disappear, that was fucking magic.
And one of my girlfriends said to me one time, we were walking down the street and somebody like fully stopped their car to point and laugh at me. Like I was a crazy punk, you know? And she was like, you know what? You made those people happy. Like who cares that they're like bad people who wanted to like stop and mock you? Like you really made those people, like they're gonna go home and be like, you have no idea the creature we saw today, you know? Like I was like their Loch Ness monster of the day, you know? I was like a mythical magical being. And so are you.
So are you. We are the freaks, mister.
We are the weirdos, mister. Like, it might be my next tattoo. Because it is like you said, and like, as one of your mentors, Caroline Elliott, said, you know, shame is the magic killer. We had a whole live episode about dance. And I talk about this all the time, about singing. Like, people who are too ashamed to sing and dance, you're crushing your magic. Like it really, and again, I put as a comment on social media just the other day, somebody, so there was some synchronicity that would, had happened with one of our followers, listeners. And I was like, to me, magic is 10% making miracles and 90% noticing the miracles that are happening all the time. And that, to me, is what being a witch is. People who don't want to take the label because they're not, I don't know, feminist enough or Antifa enough or, like, pagan enough or whatever enough or whatever enough, like... You already have it. It's yours.
You don't have to worry about that label if it's not for you. It's all right.
Oh yeah,
it's all right, Mom.
You don't have to. You don't have to take the label witch, but I must insist that you at some point in your life accept the label of magical.
Yeah.
Because we are all magical beings, and again, I can't stress this enough. It's like embarrassment and shame that prevents us a lot of times from flourishing into the beam of light that we can be.
Yeah, totally. Okay, do you want to hear my llama story?
Okay, Risa has this amazing llama stud story. So I'm going to sit back with my water bottle and let her set the scene for you.
Okay, this is a story of the most successful spell and the darkest thing I think that I've gone... One of the darkest things I've gone through.
Sup, ask him, sup.
Yeah. And it came on the heels of... I had been in a 10-year relationship, 11-year relationship with a person I loved, and there was, like, addiction there, and it felt trapped all the time towards the end, and I made it out, and I made it out to Amy's house at first. Yeah. And we cried, I cried, and we...
No, you did not. You did not. It took you, like... 2 hours of weird sullen silence.
I was in shock.
Of course. Oh, yeah. No judgment at all. Right. And I remember thinking like some shit, but I know Risa and she's not like the, I'm going to come and like dump all my stuff out on you. Like it, you know, which I find kind of like abusive when people just come and dump all over you and then leave. But anyway, that's completely beside the point. I know Risa and I'm like, she'll tell me what's going on whenever she's. So we like, worked our way through some like bad renditions of some things, and then I think once the floor was open, then there were some tears.
I remember singing with you and my voice getting deeper and bigger
during
not that first day, but in those days that followed, in those weeks that followed, figuring out who I was. And then I had a series of progressively worse relationships, just made worse and worse decisions. And like the first one was bad. So imagine how much worse they got.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like I was echoing louder and louder this theme of being trapped. I kept putting myself into situations and choosing to be trapped in a way. Like when I look back now, I see that. It was all different. It was variations on a theme. And some were worse than others. And I got stronger as I left those situations, or, you know, as the situations crumbled around me, and it was like learning versions of them. Like you're going to keep living a pattern until you move through the pattern, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I really think a lot of it was that, and it was brutal, and it was partially like really hot and really fun, and it was like, you know,
usually,
like soul destroying and delightful. And then the last one, I thought I was out. I thought it was like love. I thought it was good, you know, and
seemed totally normal.
It seemed so normal.
Look out for the ones that, speaking of We Are the Weirdos, Mister, like, especially careful of those that seem a little too normal.
Oh, yeah. The golden boy vibe?
Uh-huh.
That should be a big red flag.
Yeah. Some people are just amazing, but some people are wearing a their own suit of armor
a
of normalcy.
Mask.
Yeah.
And he started disappearing. And I look back now and I'm like, the first two times he disappeared, like, just didn't show up. Like, we were supposed to meet in Vermont, and he just didn't show. I was playing a show, you know, and he couldn't be there for me in the audience. And then my grandfather died. Uh-huh. He stopped answering texts. He just disappeared, you know? He stopped answering texts. He just disappeared, you know? And I was in so much pain, and the person I loved wasn't there. And I let it happen more than once, you know? And I accepted the answer. I'm working so hard on my business, on my startup. I have so much shame that I can't provide for you. Things aren't going well. And so I don't want to see you. I want to see you when things are going well. And like
part of being trapped is allowing yourself to be lied to or lying to yourself because you want to be perfect, because you don't want to be judged, because you just want so much approval. And like, that has been my magic killer, you know?
And I think like a good indicator that you're learning and growing is when you can see your own culpability. Mm. Like, so easy to be like, that guy was a dick, and he was, and probably still is, but like, well, it was and is, I assume. I mean, but how we're culpable, you know, and how we allow ourselves to be.
Yeah, I mean, it's helpful in the getting out of the cage of rage and victimhood and pity
to be repetition.
Mm-hmm. To be like, what did I choose? What did I choose? What did I choose? And why? And what did it feed in me? Yeah. What did I get out of it?
Yeah. You know? Doesn't Dr. Phil say, like, how's that working for you? And, you know, Dr. Phil's, like, problematic aside, but, like, I sometimes, like, I'm like, what are you getting out of this? Like, you keep doing this, so.
You're enjoying something.
Something, yeah. You know?
So then I was on a backpacking trip in the Grand Canyon.
As one is.
As you do sometimes. he disappeared again. And a person I love and admire, a very beautiful person in my life, had died in the Grand Canyon the year before. Had literally fallen off the edge. And I was going in there, you know, and I was in that spot where she had been, and I was writing to say goodbye for a couple of days, and I wasn't getting answers, and I was with a really powerful friend. And we got down to Plateau Point, which looks like it's the bottom of the canyon when you're at the top, but it's only halfway there.
which, again, is another great metaphor.
Yeah.
Sometimes what you think is the bottom is actually halfway there. You better check it.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's the last bit that catches the sun, you know, and we're out there and we're leaning over and you see the Colorado River and the canyon around you and you know you're in a holy space. For the Havasupai and the Hopi and the Navajo and like hundreds of years of people who own and have, to whom that place has been sacred and whose ownership of that space has been violated by colonizers who are my family. And it's like a conflicted and fucked up space. And also like just an overwhelmingly in your bones, holy space. And I was just like, all the decisions that I turned to my friend and said, all the decisions in my life are correct because I'm here.
Every moment in my life has led to this moment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And also, that's done now. That's over now. Like, that relationship is over. That's the last time, and I'm never gonna... I'll send him an explanation email that I don't want to hear from him again, and that 2 years of my life is just over.
And you guys were living together at the time.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like some, like, oh, we were dating. Like, it was a real thing.
It was a real thing. And I got home, and I just never saw him again. He never picked up his stuff. He just never, and I realized he had stolen like $4,000 from me using my credit cards and
on top of like what you had loaned him in good faith for like various.
And it was just, and then come to realize, months later, and I told the story of my most successful love spell in an early episode.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a love spell that I had done during this relationship. It was like, let me be with a person who matches me in these ways and who wants to live in the country and have a baby and go canoeing and go camping. And like, I made a spell of like, let my life become this, you know? And 2 months later, the person I was with fucking disappeared. And 5 months later, I turned around to someone I'd known for 10 years and we were like, oh shit, it's you.
It's you.
Oh, dang.
But I mean, all this to say, like, magic does never, I'm not going to say not always, magic never works the way you think it's going to. And often it's a long and drawn out process.
Like this story where I haven't gotten to the glamorous part yet, but I thought you might enjoy the background.
Yes.
Anyway, it disappeared. I fell in love.
I'm not there yet. Okay, so after the ghosting had taken place.
Yeah.
Risa comes to my door, and I had sort of, like, heard, you know, one of my girlfriends was like, listen, our mutual friends is like, yeah, like, I'll let Risa tell you what happened, but, like, it's not good, you know? And she told me this, she got to the door and I was like, okay, do you want to start by like playing some music and just like chilling? Or do you want to start with Cosmo Magazine, ultimate ghosting of all time, craziest ghost that ever ghosted, it happened to me, Cosmo Magazine. Yeah. Because I had never even heard of such a thing.
Yeah.
Like ghosting, okay, you go on a couple dates, you never hear from the person again. Yeah. You know, but you guys were living together. It's not funny.
It is. It's sort like, of funny.
Like, it's just like, this is my like, like.
Because I came home and was continuing to write to him and just nothing.
Yeah. Like, no text, no email, not reading your messages, like your messenger messages, yeah, from what I remember, being left unread.
Yeah.
And then there was like, you called his grandma, I want to say, like.
Yeah, found out he was fine. He was, yeah, because you're. I'll let him know you're trying to get,
you're
him
like, he's in dead in a ditch.
Yeah.
At some point, it changes from, like, fury to,
right,
worry,
when
right?
When I got back from Grand Canyon, I was like, I need to make sure he's not dead in a ditch before I
get
I end
too
this
angry.
All. And also, yeah, he owes me a shit ton of money.
Yeah.
Anyway, this all happens. I get a message from a girl out of the blue telling me, he's been in multiple relationships. He has multiple long-term relationships in different cities. And also he ghosted on his whole business, you know, stole money from his investors and creditors, set up the same business again, taking advantage of farmers in another city. I mean, it was like,
and he had set himself up to be this like ethical entrepreneur, yeah, who like really wanted to, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So it was quite, it really felt like being, like, people, when I tell the whole story, are like, it's like you were in Catch Me If You Can.
Yeah. Yeah.
That makes it sound more delightful than it was.
Yeah. Like, how do you catch a ghost?
Yeah. And then it was Lammas.
Yes.
And friends came up to the house that I wasn't living at full time yet, where I live now, by the lake, in the woods, and they knew that I had fallen in love with Mark, and they also knew that, like, there was just this unresolved wound, like, there was just this, and also just violation and trust. Like, how do you trust when one day someone just disappears and it turns out they're not who they thought they were?
With your hard-earned money on plus.
Yeah.
Break my heart, but don't touch my wallet, yo. Like, come on.
Yeah. And so we had a fire, and it was an epic fire, you know? It was like it was a burn-it-all-down fire. It was like dragging chunks of tree and sawing down tree and hacking down tree and building this pyre. And then cleaning the house, I found a pair of the ghost slippers that had been handmade by his grandmother and were falling apart, and he wore all the time. And when the fire was at its biggest, we lay them on the fire and they caught, like, dry old wood will do, old wool will do. And I got really choked up, and my friend said something beautiful that I can't repeat. And it was an improvised spell of gratitude to the woman who had made the slippers. Mm-hmm. And it was just so liberating in a way. It was like, you know, I'm not angry at the whole world, and we all make mistakes, and we've all supported people who turned out to be bad people or at bad places in their lives, and we have good intentions. And like, there was a woman somewhere there who had loved him, you know? And so
loved
I was,
him enough to hand make him a pair of slippers.
Yeah, yeah. And the slippers were like knitted wool, and they had holes in them. And there was something about, you know, having the hope to like knit around the hole, to like to reach out to the possibility on the other side of the gaping wound, you know, and also to recognize the joy that was there in that moment, like with friends and a loved one in the lake, and like, fuck that asshole, you know, like, and we made corn and we stuck all the corn on the cob into the fire, and then we pulled it out and we made poppets out of the corn husks, and we said things, or we thought things quietly to ourselves about what we were releasing, or what we were wishing for, or who we were wishing, or who we were releasing. And we burned all those poppets. It was all these little men going up in smoke in the fire around the slippers. And we had a party. And I got home, and 2 days later, I got a text from him.
And it had been how long at this point?
It had been 7 months.
7 months, and then 2 days after your bonfire.
And the text said, you know, I'm sorry, I don't like the person I've become. I owe you an immediate repayment with interest and an apology. And then he started transferring me money. And he paid me back double what he had stolen from me.
Unheard of, first of all.
And I never heard from him again. And I never answered him. And now I've told the world that we're free and clear. I did another spell later of forgiveness. And I did, for a moment at least, find a place of forgiveness that I carry with me, like a little seed, you know? Yeah.
And we've talked about this so much, about how the magic that we do oftentimes, and how actually, and we'll tell this story, how we started, again, formalizing our coven work, is being presented with absolute chaos, which is the world and life on Earth, and trying to grasp any symbolic or otherwise way that you can of having some control over what is going on. And so we find that whether we're dyeing our hair purple or whether we're laying cards and trying to analyze ourselves based on what the cards are saying, or whether we're burning candles or poppets or boots or slippers.
Yeah, or making art.
Yeah, or making art is of course a big one. You know, creating, destroying, basically anything we do is this opportunity for like a magical renewal in our sense of self and in our own power, which again is what it comes down to all the time. Like, what's the book? I just started reading it recently, so maybe I'll put in a little note here when I remember, but the little intro quote is something like, everyone is a witch who recognizes their power. All others might only suspect. Something to that effect. Anyway. So yeah, just like when you were doing this spell, it wasn't like a he's going to pay me back the money spell. No. It was like a release me from, you know, my distrust, like these kind of, like just like a freeing of your heart and soul. And somehow in the great cosmic geometry, things shook down and it resulted in you actually getting money.
Yeah. And I bought the piece of land next to mine.
Yes. Which you were trying to figure out how to do.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of that kind of could be good, could be bad kind of stuff that happens in our lives. The old Chinese proverb that I've probably told before, but the very short version is, you know, one of the cows wanders away and the farmer says, could be good, could be bad. And everyone says, what are you talking about? One of your cows wandered away. Like, of course it's bad. And so his son goes to find the cow. Story goes on and on, you know, the army comes to take the son, but the son's not there because he was off looking for the cow. All this is, you know, goes on and on and on, and always like could be good, could be bad. You had this horrible thing happen, but ultimately it funded part of your land purchase.
Oh my God, I found the love of my life. Yeah. I live in my dream house. I have like the most hilarious baby.
Yeah.
Everything is fine. Like I went through what for me were very dark days, and it was all like I think made me a better person. And anyway, tell me a story about your successful magic. That's enough of my bullshit and oversharing.
Yeah, again, like I find that the biggest magic for me is in the noticing. Lately, of course, like most of my magic has, my craft, capital C craft, has gone into the making of the podcast. You know, like instead of just like reading spells, I'm reading about witches. And then instead of, you know, maybe making a poem for myself, I'm writing an essay about this witch. But it's all very craft driven. But I have found like since we started the podcast that I'm actually doing less and less spell work. But maybe that's just because I am in such like a, I feel good about, you know, where I am in my life, in my own skin, which is a bigger one than, you know, feeling like secure in your place in the world, like feeling secure in your own skin. So maybe that's why, like, I haven't been doing as much spell work proper as I did in the past, because I feel like, you know, that end of 16 candles moment, Make-A-Wish, it already came true. But certainly in the past, there have been so many things. We've had a lot of success with group stuff, where we all come together and we have our own sort of desires that we want to manifest, and we all go out about our day and then reconvene the next day and say, this is what happened to me, and this is what happened to me. One in particular, like, two of our girlfriends went and made out with random people that night. I like found the apartment that I was looking for. There was another one that we did where I was like, I just, you know, I needed money. I was in a whatever financial stress that I was in, and we did a group. And I think it was financially driven. We particularly gathered herbs, you know, that are significant in terms of financial. And I think the next day, if not that very day, when I got home, there was an email with a graphic design job, you know, like just, and again, it's not, money is not necessarily, you do a money spell and it falls into your lap, but maybe you'll get an opportunity, you know. Magic isn't necessarily going to be like, oh, I won the lottery, or, you know, this man sent me a pile of money that he owed me, or whatever. It could just be like an opportunity comes up, you know, and who knows what the actual physics of that is. If we're changing the vibration of vibrations, who knows if the person who sent me that email had been thinking about it, probably, you know, it was for album artwork, so it wasn't out of the blue. But something just ting, you know, some kind of bing. We don't know where our thoughts come from. Maybe they come from magic. We don't know. I mean, it's, you know, so maybe something in his head just went, I should email Amy today. And so he did, and spell successful, you know.
Also, I think you're so right that so much of witchcraft, like 90%, is you do the mundane first, you know. You know, like if you want a dream house, then there are spells you can do, and you know, you should describe it, and you should paint it, and you should write it down, and then you should go bestow love on where you live. You know, like you have to clean it, and you have to cherish it, and you have to start to get rid of junk in the corners that you wouldn't move with you to a new house. You know, and then you have to like look at the listings and like you tell people that you're looking, and
that's part of the magic too. Putting your intention out into the universe.
We're not talking about like sitting alone and hoping that the world flips itself on its head for you. You know,
no.
The mundane is part of the magic.
And I'm going to get back to that because I think it's really important, but I just want to stick a pin in what you said about like not expecting the world to change for you. And I think magic is more about changing your perception. People are going to do what they do. Everybody's trying to get by. That's what helps me with my compassion, is just knowing that like everybody's just trying to get by. You can do your magic to change your perception, to change how you react to a situation.
And to make yourself able to see the pathways.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes when we're in this dark tunnel, we don't see, you know, there's a way that flips for you from the bad to the good.
Yeah.
There's a way. It's right there, you know.
A couple seasons ago on Drag Race, anybody who knows me knows that I'm a longtime obsessed Drag Race fan, drag in general, but Dusty Ray Bottoms had this moment. His parents are, I'm assuming, very right-wing Christian. And they tried to have him do ex-gay therapy, conversion therapy.
Conversion camp,
All this kind of, you know, just horrible circumstance for him. And he was raised a Christian, so he went to God. And he said, God, I need something to change. I need something to change. Please, you have to help me. And you're thinking when you make these prayers to whoever your deity is that they're going to make things nice for you. But what happened with Dusty was his parents found some gay porn in his room and shit blew up and problems. And he ended up getting in his car and driving away. And of course now he's happy and free and in love. But this is the tower, the tarot card of the tower. You know, we all get scared when we see that tower, but we have to realize like could be good, could be bad. This absolute ultimate, my lowest point could be me breaking out of my cocoon into my butterfly state. It's hard not to get like so bogged down by just like the bad things happening, or it's too stressful, it's too hard. Like how many times in your life, Risa, have you said, I can't do this anymore? Like this is too hard, whatever it was. But we're still here and y'all are still here. Stay with us. Like I've said a billion times, I can't do this anymore. A billion!
You know? Easy billion.
Easy
you
billion.
You know, you reminded me when, and this is such a tiny version of this, but we had just started
with some candle magic to say goodbye to a friend who mm-hmm. had passed.
Ange May. May she rest in peace with joy forever.
And in all her power. And we talked and we started to gather in some improvised circles and it was like play and it was peaceful and joyful. And I told a friend about it who was very pragmatic and I thought she would be weirded out. And the next time I saw her, she had a pile of books for us. So she worked in the books section at the Salvation Army and they made her pull the witch books off the shelves.
Because they're not allowed to sell them.
They're not allowed to sell them. And so that pile of witch books came straight into the witchy loving arms of a coven that was very happy to receive
them. And very new. Like, we formalized, like we were saying. We had been talking about it in Moon. We started getting together at the full moon and just singing and laughing. And then when Ange May passed, it became like, okay, this is our church. Yeah. And our congregation needs us. Mm-hmm. You know, and we gathered and we cried, you know. And we lit candles and we cried. And part of it was because, especially when someone dies, y'all, you don't know what to do. Yeah. There's nothing you can do. It's the only finality in all. Like, my father just passed a couple months ago. And that's the thing that gets me all the time. It's just like, any problem that we had ever had before, you know, you keep going.
Yeah.
This is final. And there's nothing you can do about it. And we don't know what's happening. We have our belief systems, all of us, whatever your faith is, whatever your post-death experience, whatever you think happens, we know that there's nothing we can do about it, whether we know it or not. So again, in that, it's just like trying to grab whatever order from the chaos that we can. What do we do?
What do we do?
We look at each other, we say, what do we do? And so you go into your book, like people do with their Quran or their Torah or their Bible or their Gita, you know, and our book said you light a white candle, a red candle, and a black candle. And so it's just a way of focusing that sort of frenetic, chaotic, we don't know what to do. Let's sit in a circle and light a candle. At least then we know what to do.
Yeah.
Whether it does something or doesn't do anything or whatever, at least we know what to do.
Yeah, we mark this moment. Yeah. And one of the things I like about craft is it doesn't tell you what to believe. Witchcraft isn't a faith, it's a practice. And so it doesn't tell me that I have to imagine this friend or your father in a certain place or that I have to behave in a certain way to join them, or, you know, none of that is part of it. It's just here are a set of suggested actions and you could improvise your own.
And we would love it if you did. Oftentimes, like books, even when you're reading books, they'll tell you, like, improvise into, you know.
You don't have cinnamon. You don't
One of our most successful group spells, I believe, was the spell wanted ginger, and we had ginger ale. And we ended up drinking it.
Yeah.
And it really worked great.
Really worked good that day. Just fucking try stuff, guys. It's fun.
But that's like just it, whether you're a solitary practitioner. And again, I mean, a lot of my craft is very private. And so it manifests a lot differently than group stuff.
Yeah.
I find group stuff is almost got like a group bang to it. You know, it's like the energy is, for better or for worse. Like it's definitely like a barn raising.
Yes.
But like an energy.
I'm not always ready for it. We had people over and I had my placenta in the freezer for almost a year.
As one does.
As one does. And I wanted to bury it. And it was a full moon. It was just after the full moon. It was the solstice.
Mm-hmm.
And we had little twin girls over and some other friends and Mark. And my mom was there and my daughter was there. And they kept sort of talking to me like, oh, so we'll make the fire for the ceremony. And like, when we're going to do a ceremony. And they're little twin kids. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, when's the ceremony? And I didn't really feel comfortable like leading a ceremony. To me, it was so private in a way. It was this thing that I had grown with her in my body. And I just wanted it to be warm in the earth and not in my freezer, you know?
Yeah.
And I wanted it to be at my home. And I wanted them all there, but I didn't feel equipped to have them stand in a circle around and to witness my vulnerability with that.
Mm-hmm.
It was very magical for me that they were there. Mm-hmm. So I broke it up during the day. So
I had a craft that the kids could do, you know, weaving sunshines, and we hung that out in the woods.
I think you saw those on Instagram, people. Yeah. Oh, they're so cute.
And we gathered flowers, and I went and dug a hole by myself, and I wrapped my placenta in paper and then washed my hands and buried it by myself and put a bunch of warm dirt on top of it where we're going to have a flower garden. And then with the kids and my mom and other people, we made a sun out of fruit, and we threw the fruit pits in the earth. And then we went and gathered bouquets of flowers, and we buried them on a mound in the earth, and we put rocks. And like, it was through bits throughout the day. And I guess I'm telling you this because it's a tangent that I started on, but also because I want you to feel like you don't have to suddenly become like a high priestess.
Oh, no.
You know what I mean? You don't have to act like you know shit that you don't know. You can improvise your bits and pieces in a way that gives you a private strength. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why a lot of covens, like, they sort of take turn. You know, you'll lead the circle 1 week, and, you know, whoever will lead it the next week. And because that sort of prevents this, like, hierarchical, I'm the leader. Used to say on my report card when I was a kid, Amy's a born leader. But sometimes Amy just wants to sit back and, like, be part of the experience and be led. Like, my solstice was, Brother Solomon smudged me into the circle. And then we did, you know, I had no part of leading that. I was a silent witness, you know, like, and that's just as exciting to me, if not more sometimes, than being the high priestess of the circle, right?
Relief.
Like, I don't want to be the smartest. I don't want to be the smartest person in any room.
Me neither.
Like, I want to be the dumbest person in any given room, and all y'all can teach me, because I already know what I know. Yeah. What I don't know is what you know, or what you all are going to email to us that I don't know. Like, I don't know these things.
Yeah.
But your talk about, like, how you just spent the day in magicality. You know, it wasn't like you walking down the aisle and you're white, you know, it was just like a full, and then we made this, and we made a sun shape out of our fruit. Like, you don't have to have placenta. We were talking about, I mean, you can, and that's an amazing magical tool.
Many hospitals won't let you leave with it. At my hospital, I could not say that I was going to bury it. My doctor told me, when they ask you, tell them you're going to do an art project with it, and they'll give it to you.
It's funny that you say art project, because when I got my father's ashes, one of the first things that I did was I sent out a group message to some of the more, like, radical conceptual artists that I know, and I was like, listen, if you need some human ashes for an art project, like, you know, art to me is like the god that we have on earth, you know, like, art is like what my religion essentially, you know. And one of the responses was like, oh, that's so generous and weird and generous. And I was like, if weird and generous is my brand, like, I'm happy with that. But, like, yeah, so if anybody's like, oh, what are you doing with that placenta or human ashes or pipe cleaners, tell them it's for an art project.
Yeah.
If you're worried about it, tell them it's for an art project, because, you know, witchcraft is an art project. But anyway, this daily magic that you did, you had mentioned the mundane earlier, and, like, maybe that's why I feel like I do less, like, I'm doing air quotes here, quote unquote, like, spell work, is because I've integrated it so much into my daily life. Like, I hate cleaning. But give me some Florida water and a nice yellow mop bucket, and I'm doing spell work.
Yes.
But I'm also refreshing my home and, like, cleaning my environment and getting those, like, metaphorical and literal, like, dust out of the corner and freshening the air. Like, you know, you can add Florida water or make your own, like, floor wash that's magical, but, like, that's the one of the only ways I can get myself to do these things, like, to actually get on my hands and knees and scrub the floor, which has to be done, like, from time to time. But to make it spell work, to make it a magical endeavor, is, like, it makes it a completely different and an enjoyable experience for me. And it takes away the drudgery. You
me
know?
Too. Completely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to do a little Lammastai reading. Now, I pulled this one out of all of the millions of sources around the world, because it is from one of the books that your friend
Pam,
that Pam gave us from the Salvation Army reject pile, and it became, I mean, I got one of the sigils from it tattooed on my back, like, almost immediately. I've sort of flipped open the book and it was like there, and I was like, that's what needs to go there. Maybe I'll post a picture. Maybe I won't. You guys don't care about my tattoos, but maybe you do. so anyway, like we started like hauling this book around a little bit, you know, and it sort of, because it had been gifted to us, we sort of felt like we were meant to have it, you know. It's not like,
and that's the Solitary Witch book.
Oh yes. Okay. So that is the Solitary Witch, Book of Shadows for a New Generation, Solitary Witch by Silver Ravenwolf. So again, that's Solitary Witch by Silver Ravenwolf. And apparently this is a popular text for witches. I mentioned to my sister that we had gotten this, and she was like, oh, I remember that from...
Yeah, Silver Ravenwolf for sure is a name that we might come back to.
Yes.
And the idea of Solitary Witch, I think for us, was like, oh, rad. Like, we don't have to join a church, because it's not a, sort of the furthest from what we wanted, you know. It's fun to, like, go to a local community Wiccan high holiday, but I really want to just be making up shit on my own most of the time.
Yeah. When we need to be told, again, like we were saying, like, sometimes you're a leader and sometimes you're a follower, and that's exactly what it is. Like, whether in your own practice, you know, sometimes you're going to pull something directly out of a book. Sometimes you're going to make it up as you go along, which is, you know, we get pretty excited.
We love this. Okay, so I'm going to give you some witchy summer homework, and then we'll close with this invocation for this summer holiday. I just want you all to meditate on and in the sun, on your own fat sun flourishing, on a time when you planted a seed and it flourished, and write it down, and then write down where it's going next, what's flourishing next for you. I really, that is, there's so much magic and power in seeing your own power in the past and in seeing it go forward and having faith in that. And I want that for you for this Lammas tide.
Mm-hmm. It's the Lammas is the first harvest festival of the year, and so this is the time when we get to reap what we have sown. So it's necessarily you have to look back and think about the seed that you planted, but now you're harvesting the wheat. And a harvest festival is always super exciting because it's bountiful and it's energetic and it's like stomach filling. And part of your mind is like, I know I have to save some of this for when, you know, Yuletide comes along and we've run out. But mostly you're just like running in the great fields of imagination and watching things.
Maybe make fruit. A poppet and light it on fire.
You know, they're so, if you ask Risa, Lammas tide is a great time to do any kind of burning spell work. I'm going to get on board with that too. An August 1st bonfire. I feel like Lammas tide doesn't get a lot of recognition in terms, like, it might be.
What a nice one. That's a good one.
Such a, but I think maybe it's like August and everyone's like, I'm on vacation.
It's not an obvious, like, changing of the season either, where it's like, let's ritualize this. I feel the turning of the tide. It's like, it's fat and sunny. You're by a lake and you're eating fruit. Yeah. And that is what I want to celebrate. That's my high holiday.
So let us, like, bring it back to its rightful places, you know, in our top eight. I don't know if you guys are old enough to remember MySpace, but Lammas will always forever be in our top eight. But I think maybe it's like the unpronounceable name might also have some of these. So we'll go with Lammas tide again.
Yeah.
And Silver Ravenwolf also called it Lammas. Thank you. So unless you have any more well wishes for our bonfires of witches.
No, that's it. That's my homework and all my love for you.
Yeah. Plant a seed. Watch it grow. It can be like a seed you found in your marijuana stash, or like, I love planting plants and transplanting plants, but nothing gets me off more than germination. Like, to plant a seed and then watch it crack open. Like, the next day you go out and you can see it's like cracking and there's like a little green thing. If you live in a bachelor apartment, you can plant one seed. you know. And this is something I wish I'd known before I moved to the country. Yeah, you don't have to have a bunch of land to grow some parsley on your counter. Like, duh. You know, I wish in all of my apartment living that I just had a parsley plant on the counter. My God. So yeah, plant a seed, whether it's an actual literal seed or a metaphorical seed of imagination, and watch what bears fruit. Now I'm going to read this. Thank you again, Silver Ravenwolf, for this Lammas invocation, and to Pam from the book section of the Salvation Army, and to the Salvation Army for rejecting us so that we can find each other in a different place. The king and queen are wed at last, while summer's kiss turns fields and grass to harvest gold and garden gifts, find sacrifice on earthen lips. Witches gather hand to hand, power raised along the band, vortex spiral in its quest, forced form I manifest. Debts repaid and games of sport, weather magic, Thor's retort, blessing babies, baking bread, stocking up for winter's stead. Witches gather hand in hand, power raised along the band, vortex spiral in its quest, forced form I manifest. Bonfires dancing circle round, fruits and produce from the ground offer up a feast of praise while shadows lengthen in the maze. Witches gather hand in hand, power raised along the band, vortex spiral in its quest, forced form I manifest. August sun turns all to bronze, golden children singing songs. Fireflies flitter in the dark, touching all with fairy dust. Witches gather hand to hand, power raised along the band, vortex spiral in its quest, forced form I manifest. Dark Lord melts into the night, taking with him summer's light. Merging wishes, law and might, removing evil from our sight. Witches gather hand in hand, power raised along the band, vortex spiral in its quest, forced to form, I manifest. Blessed be witches. Mm-hmm. Happy Lammastide.
Happy summer.
We love you.
You aren't being a proper woman, therefore you must be a witch.
Be a witch. Be a witch. Be a witch. Be a witch.
You must be a witch.